Calling the January 26th Planning Commission meeting in order at this time. Do we have any comments for the good of the order prior to not on the agenda? All right, this is going easy so far. The first order I see on the agenda here is public comment on non-agenda items, limited to 3 minutes. Does any member of the public wish to comment on a non-agenda item? Seeing none, review the minutes of January 12th Planning Commission meeting. Conversation. Do we hear a motion?
Move to approve the minutes of January 12th.
Discussion. Motion approved for the minutes. I was going to ask, those the minutes are normally signed off on the following meeting. Is that still happening?
Well, we collect them and then we'll bring them to the chair.
Mass signatures.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Next item is a transportation element. Mike, you want to get us started there? I guess restarted.
What we're bringing back to you is the policies today that the Planning Commission discussed at the last meeting. And we did take Gary's the comments that you provided in the request to put some of the idling issues into a policy. So we're bringing that back to you. Jenna had worked on that and finessed that a little bit. And not getting into any issues regarding our idling ordinance itself. This is just the policy that gives direction for the city to look into the issue. Ron, did you have an update on the transportation list?
I do.
Okay, yeah.
So we're afterwards?
Yeah.
I want to give as much time for the goals and policies as possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but I've got an update of the capital project list.
And then you're not receiving the whole transportation element yet, which is a lot of the kind of extraneous text that describes the context of the different state standards and the level of service standards, et cetera. We'll get that in a future meeting.
I'll just comment. I got a couple emails that I think only came to me, and I forwarded them out to everyone else from a couple initiatives. I assume residents and or people who use Trucktown. Did anybody notice that they got that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Are those submitted as comments?
They came to my inbox, and I believe they would have sent them to all of us in the Planning Commission if they knew our address. So that's why I forwarded them back. It was just comments related to, let's see, the summary point for a couple of them will be they are living in their trucks. It would be akin to turning the power off at their homes, was the perspective.
And keep in mind, we will be noticing an official public hearing for the date that we hope to have the whole plan ready for adoption. So those people would most likely have that chance again to comment, and we have been keeping track of the ones that have been coming in.
Without monopolizing the meeting on that one topic, even though it's a big one, I also presume that and everything else related to Trucktown traffic issues will come back up again once City Council approves whatever they're going to do about the task force or whatever it's going to be called. Is that also the plan that you're hearing? We're not going to do anything here in short order that's not going to be addressed there, right?
You mean here tonight?
In the next many planning meetings going forward, there's really nothing we're going to do to impact the prospect of Trucktown being reviewed on its own merits.
No.
Okay. I'm just imagining if I were out in the citizenry thinking something's going to get rolled over without comment, I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, just, and since we do have a number of citizens here and more coming in, so I'll wait until you guys are in. The main process that I think it's important to be aware of is what we're doing right now is updating our comprehensive plan, and specifically the transportation element of that. And the comprehensive plan basically provides the goals and policies that guide the implementation of those. So basically guide the regulations that you form in the future, or the incentives, or the different packages that the city can provide to implement whatever is set up in the comprehensive plan, whether it's through regulation or incentive. So the document that will come out of this commission is a recommendation plan to the city council for the transportation element of the comprehensive plan as a whole. And then any goal and policy that is followed up then with a regulation, that particular regulation goes through the same process. So it will, any development regulation. So it will either go to the Planning Commission for public hearing and review and a recommendation to City Council, or if it's not a development regulation and something more like changing the speed limit, that can go directly to City Council for review and approval there, but everything is required to have a public hearing. So that being said, tonight what we are doing, what this board is doing, is providing a recommendation on the goals and policies that would further be followed up with some sort of regulation. I don't know if that helps. Does that answer your question, Jim?
Yes. Yep. Thanks.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if we made how far down the process we made it on our last meeting, Mike, for this discussion. I know it's kind of led by the document.
I think we had gotten through all of the policies, and tonight we were just going to come back to make sure that the changes that the Planning Commission suggested that we've addressed the concerns that you had, and then any other comments you wanted to deal with on the policies.
One thing that I might recommend, this is not an official public hearing, so we aren't, it's a public workshop, which is a little bit different. It can be a little more relaxed atmosphere. We don't have the 3-minute timer and what have you. So what we could do tonight is, like we did the last meeting, kind of went through page by page. And when we have an issue, or if there is, we're projecting it, so if there is a citizen that has a question, you know, feel free to raise your hand, and then we can address that as we go, and keep it kind of an informal process, but also maybe try to keep your comments as, yeah, like the 3 minutes, just because, you know, we have quite a document to get through, and time is always of the essence.
I think the truck town thing has, as long as it, in my opinion, I asked for everybody else's comment, as long as that is going to stay and remain an area of focus, and I don't mean just particulates in the air, I mean traffic and anything that relates to it, since it's new to the city, then the rest of this transportation is still a big issue. I'm kind of realizing we're going to this focus over this island over here, let's not forget about the rest of the city. So, with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, I wonder, has the Orchard Drive barricade been remedied?
We are looking into that one. It's a little more complicated than just removing the barricade, because there's actually, the right-of-way doesn't continue all the way through. What it does is it butts up against a property that's owned by the Department of Transportation. That was a part of the original I-90 proposal when I-90 was going to be going through town as opposed to over the Allen Mall.
That, and that being said, we met, last Thursday or Thursday apart? But basically the process is we will let the council know that this came up, that the issue then goes to council committee for their kind of review. That's going to go to a council committee here in the near future. It's going to be Public Works. And in the meantime, we're analyzing. Mike's been doing some research on the issues that lie, whether it's the conditions of the plat or what have you. So once the council committee reviews it, they have the opportunity to send that up to the full council. So it's in the process, but the process does take a little bit of time because the committee meets once a month.
this could be unrelated, but one of the citizens asked me what's going on with the fire station.
It's under design. The station documents will be submitted to the planning department on February 1st for SEPA and permitting. Has to go through that. And then we also will have a chance to make some revisions to the plans or the specs. And we're looking at going out to bid probably the early part of March, opening in April, awarding in May, and starting construction in June.
Does that mean end of the year?
No, it's going to take a 15-month construction period.
Okay.
So probably sometime in 2013 it could be done.
Cool. Thank you. Sorry, I was off track, but today's question.
That's okay.
So I think just kind of let's maybe just stir the pot again if there's any questions on this whole document that we've been spending hours and hours with.
Can I just say, so I received about a dozen emails. I did not forward them on. Some of them were not appropriate to forward on. Some of them came from independent truckers of an organization. Some of them came from owners of trucking companies. I'd say the primary theme was just that, is feeling cold in their truck without power. And I hope when we get to that section, some of the things that I propose there with providing the heating and cooling for drivers in a trucking facility that's an overnight parking lot, I think that you know, it's important that we not just look at one part of idling, we look at also the conveniences that have to accommodate that kind of ordinance. So I want it to be a comprehensive look at that and why I think it's important to not just focus on idling at one point of it. Other than that, you know, we've had a nice opportunity to spend some time without power with 20-degree weather outside, and so I'm certain all of us are fresh in our minds with what that feels like.
If I could, it's on wood is warm twice.
Picking up on what Gary mentioned, idling. And I'm looking specifically at on page 7 at policy P2.1.5. And I guess my question is, and Gary's heard this before, based on what empirical evidence would you impose an idling policy?
This policy is specific to city vehicles, so that would just be our own internal operations. It wouldn't be anything to the community or to truck drivers.
Okay, then we'll be down to objective, down into objective 02.2. Based on what empirical evidence would you even consider an idling ordinance?
Is that a staff question, or are you asking?
No, I'm asking the planning commission.
I'm trying to tie that to the objective that you're making sure I've got the same objective you're looking at. 022, you said?
Yes, I'm still on page 7.
Is that the
That's actually policy P2.2.1.
Where reads the. Reduce the adverse environmental and health impacts of vehicle emissions and the system.
Down below that where it says, implement idling measures to reduce or prohibit the idling of vehicles and large trucks. And I'm asking on what empirical basis, what's the empirical data that indicates that we need that?
You know, one thing that we are looking at as a city, and Mike's spearheading this, is the sustainability element of the comprehensive plan that will come forward in the near future. And part of that is a good example of, you know, it's looking at a number of these issues in the realm of just good business, you know, and as part of that comes health benefits, and it's just like turning off the power to your home, you save money, you know, there's always a benefit to reducing your consumption of energy in some way, shape, and form, whether that's environmental or economic. And so what we are looking at here is not necessarily an idling ordinance that would hinder either or of those spectrums, comfort potentially or the economics, but finding a balance where we can have a healthy community both economically and environmentally while thinking through some of the things that we haven't had to think through as a community or even a country for the last 20, 30, 50 years. So I think we know diesel emissions pollutes. We know that. So the more we can reduce that pollution level, obviously, the better off we are as a community or what have you. So I think what we're trying to do in these policies is not get to the level of detail that an ordinance does, which is where the concern that the truckers and the trucking industry will have. If we implement something that is so onerous on them that they can't do their industry properly or efficiently or effectively, that's not an ordinance that,
right.
So what this is saying is, hey, we know this is an issue, whether it's an issue of North Bend or statewide or nationwide, it's something that needs to be addressed. Now what we need to do is develop that. And that's where the real work will occur, where we really will have to have the very clear details on what temperatures are appropriate that a trucker can not have heat and what other options are there. And one trucker that called me, I thought this was wonderful information that I didn't know, was he said that every time the truck is idling, he's losing money. It costs more to run that big engine than it does to have, and he had statistical, like 5% or 10%. I recorded it because it was really a great comment. And so he basically went on to say any trucker that is interested in making money is not sitting there idling their truck unless they have absolutely no choice. And then he went on to tell me that his trucking, the owner of the fleet, actually provides them pay incentives for not idling. And right there, that is one of the most brilliant ways to get to address this issue. So those are the types of details and information that we really are going to have to dig deep into to actually develop the idling ordinance. So that's why I was kind of clarifying. What we're doing tonight is setting the goal. It's like, if your goal is to win state tournament, you write it on the wall and the whole team gets behind it, right? That's kind of what we're doing here. But how we get there is a whole nother process.
And I would go a little bit further and say, is this one of those situations where we exactly need empirical evidence to know that we need to take action? There's plenty of empirical studies out there that talk about fossil fuels and adverse health effects and how they can impact communities. And so, well, the point is that that's not practical, right? We can't close anything. But we are a community here, and we can be proactive. The other element, too, is that in the spirit of what we want to do is having a healthy community, knowing what's going on elsewhere, especially in the world, having a broader view of a more global perspective will help us frame certain policies that we can say, yes, we are a healthy community. These are concerns that, my house might not have a trucker idling in there and being bad for me. But the fact of the matter is, do I want to wait until it gets to that point? Right?
Okay.
So with the development, the progression, everything that happens, there are all these other paradigms that we have to consider when we're drafting these policies.
I understand. That helps us. But I guess that if you carry on my logic a little further, if you don't know, first of all, that you have a problem, how will you ever know if you fixed it?
It's like benchmarking or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I would flip it around and say, why wait till you have a problem and then have to recognize that you have to fix it?
So why do something if you don't have a problem?
Well, if you look at tracks and trends of other cities, other communities, you see this as a problem elsewhere, right? So it's one of those things. You just have to play it into your factoring.
One of the things that I would add to what Jenna was saying is that we're getting a lot of spillover benefit from that big state all the way to the south of us, because trucks that operate in that state have to have California-approved zero emissions at idle. We're having huge numbers of those trucks, increasing percentages of those trucks up here. So we're benefiting from what's going on in California, and the sky is falling fear that we have may not be falling at all.
Well, I would just personally, I wouldn't look at it or characterize it as the sky is falling. What I look at it as is a practical assessment of what's going on elsewhere in our nation.
That's what I'm asking for, is an assessment.
Right. And that's what we're giving. That's what we're providing.
You're giving the assumptions.
No, can I just, we're looking at...
I think he's looking for some data, and so this is from the Washington State Department of Transportation in January 2007. And so they write, in 2002, heavy and light duty trucks, marine vessels, and locomotives accounted for 56% of diesel particulate matter in the state. So if that is not evidence, I'm not sure what that would be looking
for. How specific, if the policies we're talking about are effective over the entire state, then we're talking about something. But we're talking about a couple of, we're talking less than 50 acres.
I thank you for your comment. I think what our role is for the citizens of North Bend. And this is what we're charged with and what our vision is to bring this city to where we think its potential is.
And I'm right with you. You and I have talked about this enough.
We think we ought to do an assessment before going ahead. We shouldn't just go ahead without thinking that there's a problem.
Without demonstrating that.
Well, then maybe what we're talking about, because remember, we are talking about goals and policies. So maybe what to take Tom's thoughts and incorporate them into the thought or the feelings right now of, hey, it does feel like we need to address idling. I mean, that's one thing the schools did. Now, I think if you'll notice, if you go down to Chief Canem and you pull up to the park, there's no idling signs right at the front doors of the school. So this is not just a trucking industry issue. It's a broader issue. And so maybe what we need to do is define in our goal what kind of information would be necessary to move forward with analyzing this,
or even looking at setting up goals like what you're talking about, figure out that benchmark down the road, and then start making goals to lower that benchmark.
Were you asking for air quality measurements to start with?
Two of them, actually.
Right.
One to establish an initial benchmark, and one a year or two down the road to see if there's been any change.
Right.
Well, I guess I misunderstood.
Because we're getting a lot of residual.
Because I was thinking
background residual from idling.
I thought you were approaching it from why is this policy necessary?
No.
There's a challenging of the spirit there. But if you're talking about actually contributing to the goals of making sure.
That's right. If you have an air quality study that says, yes, we are at this level, Then you
could take an
then
average.
Then you've got something to support an idling policy. And then a year or 5 years down the road, you do another one and say, hey, good for us. We've reduced it by X percentage.
Yeah, but I also think, there's a fear factor going on that might not be necessary until we start actually dealing with the idling ordinance, right?
Two of them.
Because to me, I'm going to use an analogy, and sometimes they're goofy, okay? Like when I'm on a bicycle and I'm behind a car and I come up to a stop sign and that car's blowing its emissions at me, I actually adjust my position so I don't inhale the vehicle's emissions just to reduce the amount of exposure. Now, am I going to not be on that bike? No, I'm going to still be on the bike, but I'm going to try to adjust my habits so I can still do my activity, but yet do it is the best way I can. And I kind of see what we're doing very similar is we know we have trucks emitting buses, cars, city vehicles emitting emissions into the air that aren't healthy. So how can we plan as a community to reduce that exposure? And that might be as simple as a few first steps until the technology improves, and then a few more steps. So, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, if we know how much diesel particulate is in the air, and that's our benchmark, even if we reduce it just a tiny, tiny bit, we're successful, right? Mm-hmm. So we know by turning off a vehicle, we're reducing that. And that's just when it comes down to the spending and the reality of what we can afford to do, is that something that's really going to help us? And it might. I'm just asking the question.
And again, coming back to the use of empirical data, it's the second set of empirical data that will say, yeah, we did the right thing. Mm-hmm. Or, no, we're not hitting the cause. There's something else going on. And unless you've got a benchmark study and a follow-up study, you'll never know if you're getting the cause.
Okay.
But that's needed in order to develop the ordinance, the IRA ordinance. It's not necessary to develop the policy.
Yeah, it's to establish the ordinance, make sure we're meeting our goal of that ordinance and how we would set it based on the air quality, not particularly how we set our policy.
So that's what you're saying, is to incorporate some more specifics around how we will potentially develop the idling policy versus getting into the details, which we last week is not what we want to do. So define how we will, what are the steps that we're going to take in order to get to the point where we can develop a realistic idling policy.
And I'd even argue, to push back a notch, I'm not so sure we are at a place where we're going to create a policy. I think we're talking about it.
Right.
So to your point, I think there's a lot of data that's going to be gathered between now and the time something actually becomes a functioning anything.
Right. And understand, I'm not against an island.
Sure.
But I am saying, if you do it, how do you know that you're doing the right thing?
Sure.
And only with a benchmark and a follow-up, can you have any idea?
That's good. I've been watching a hand come up.
Just real quickly, I'm not familiar with this. I don't know what's included in policy, but with the policy, I think there needs to be some viable options that can play a part of establishing the turning off the switch for, you know, shutting off the grid. It shuts off the grid. Is there another option? And I think, hey.
What is your name?
Chuck.
Chuck, what's your last name?
Calhoun. And this is where you start. If I could put a romance into the different companies that are capable of coming in and producing a system or other options that they can take, having just pulling the plug is not the full answer.
Yep.
Having viable options is the better way of going. And I agree with him, but the next step is after we've established, you know, the groundwork of do we need it, then having the groundwork also to give choices to make them available.
But we could even add a policy into this that says work with the trucking industry and truckers to ensure that any proposed measures are reasonable, viable for the industry, et cetera.
So maybe elaborate on June 6, which is around, you know, providing an
doesn't that kind of encapsulate that, though?
Yeah.
I thought I remember discussions.
heating and cooling, so that is their options if they're power off.
So I remember we discussed this last time, is, you know, those incentives for your areas to move in that direction.
I guess from my research, when I've looked at how do we get air quality data from official organizations, they run a 7-year cycle. And so I don't know if the cost to do independent studies is going to be something that the city can bear. There is a lot of data out there on emission rates based on year of vehicle or year of engine that we could use as an estimator. That wouldn't cost as much, is my thought. And so if we take, you know, the average amount of trucks in the lot and what years we want to range, we can come up with a good amount of what the emissions are. And then what I've learned about CO2, a general lifespan, is the 100-year data, I think is that the length of that. So I don't think it's a reasonable amount that we can, in our lifetime, understand how much it decreases.
Gary, did you come across, I didn't look this up or even try, but I think I heard, there was a pretty significant technical change in 2010 diesel engines, along with 2008 forward change in fuel. Is there any, have you kind of gathered, hey, here's what's changed without us saying anything?
So I think in the 2010 emissions per ton per day, I think the previous amount for a medium heavy duty diesel, I found 3.46 tons, and the revised is 2.82, so it's down, I guess, 0.64. Heavy-duty diesels were at 6.61. They went down to 5.13, and so that's 1.48 tons. So
there's, and that's a federal... federal guideline that set it up that way, right? Both fuel and the engine production.
No, it was 2007 PM emission rates based on new 2010. I don't know if I can get enough access to you.
No, I didn't mean to pin you down. I'm just trying to get some backstory to where we've come from without us even knowing about it. So the truckers absolutely know about it, because some of them had bonded grids as a company. And the fuel changes, I don't know what impact that may have had to them, fuel mileage versus et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I'm only just kind of throwing it out. If somebody's an expert in it, please step up.
I just know that my husband and I, we upgraded to a 2007, which there are better trucks out, but we traded in a 2003, and our mileage went from 5.1. Down to 7. So, huge
savings. And arguably better emissions.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
And as far as educating the truckers about things that are available to them, they know that. A lot of the issues that they have is these guys are not working on them. It's a tough business. We put a robust computer in the cab of our truck so he can sleep more. He doesn't have to idle, he can sleep down. But to get a tri-pack, which is air conditioning and heat, that's $8,000. All these trucks are working. So that's a little spending.
Yeah, so what I'm actually hearing is one of the policies we have is to develop this idling. So we're not calling it no idling, we're not calling it, it's just to address idling. And it sounds like what we need to do is take Chuck, and Tom's comments and other input here that we can get, and maybe can say, add to it to provide direction for that idling ordinance that says, consider benchmark studies that evaluate the existing air quality before and after. If we use the word consider, if financially it's not feasible or we feel in the end it isn't going to provide the benefit, we'll do the cost and, you know, weigh the benefit of it and make the determination. And then, like you said, Chuck, provide options, so that ordinance should provide options. Those options are going to come from the trucking industry that knows what's out there, what's available, what's financially feasible, and what works for you guys. So I think maybe by adding some of this language takes the guessing game out from the trucking industry that the city's just going to implement this, you know, scary regulation and puts into it at least the necessary language that you guys are going to need to say, okay, yes, we're okay with this type of direction or what have you. Yeah.
I have one other thing. I'm just thinking, you know, a policy like this, the trucking industry is changing. There's new rigs coming out every year that's improving the operation of the vehicles and so forth. And a policy like this, I would like to propose an option to have this, and I'm not sure if I'm using that word, carried in such a way for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is not have it where it comes up and says, this is the way it is from here on. But the trucking industry, in the next 10 years, there's going to be a lot of the old vehicles removed off the road. And there's going to be a lot of new ones. And let's have this emission or running issue, have it tiered in such a way for the next 10 years, there's steps for every, let's say, 2 years, every 3 years of implementing another aspect of
reduced
operations.
No, you're actually right on board. So you're basically saying allow the best available technology to you don't want to just require APUs, because that might be out of date tomorrow. So we want to basically set a policy that allows the flexibility to address the technology that changes over the next 10 years. Is that right?
Over the 10 years, yes. And
to reduce the restrictions.
To accommodate older vehicles and vehicles that don't have them.
Yes.
Right, so just like any product that has an end of life, we don't do any maintenance for it. We're going to continue to support it for X number of years, and at some point, then you have to have put the stake in the ground of we don't support this anymore.
This is a long term thing, not just something to have support for years.
Totally understand what you're saying. I'm just wondering, is that more of an ordinance issue or a policy issue? Because the way I'm understanding policy is that we're just trying to set the goals for our city and our city initiatives that may not have to have hard and fast structure, such as a tiered rollout or something like that. That would be more of an ordinance, if I'm understanding.
But I think we should set a policy that we revisit it on some specified basis, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, or whatever, so that we can cycle in new things into the actual regulation versus we're just going to put out this policy and it's going to end life in 10 years. And then,
I think at least you have to revisit these policies anyway.
Every
7 years. So you're going to come back to it anyway.
Minimum, but you can do it every year.
But keeping it in our banks, for what if an ordinance comes along or however that evolution occurs, that these type of options are what should be considered is definitely something.
Seeing what we're actually doing is talking about this. It's pretty much having a discussion I think we would have when we talked about the ordinances. One thing the ordinances that I've seen, it do, have those caveats that you're kind of talking about a grandfathered scenario where until there's an option for an old truck to tie into an ancillary power situation, that truck has the opportunity to idle. As soon as, let's say North Bend helps the TA get ancillary power through whatever, shore power, whoever. At that point, then we say, if there's power available, you can't idle. So that's kind of what you're saying, right?
It's similar to that, yeah, it is. We just don't throw the rock at everybody.
Okay. And then a hard and fast.
Yeah, and that's what kind of the, that, those are the details in an ordinance that I think that's beautiful language for an ordinance should be.
I'm fixating on the word consider. The word consider there, it says that we don't necessarily have to have a benchmark. I'm just wondering, how do we know if we succeeded without it? How do we revisit the ordinance anytime next, even 7 years from now, to know whether or not what you think has been done has worked or not?
Mm-hmm,
we're relying on memories. Without having something scientific, how do we know that we've succeeded in something if we're trying to do anything with the idle policy of some flavor? I don't know whether it made any difference at all.
It'd be interesting to see what the school did when they implemented their idling restriction at the front portion of each school, because I'd be interested to know what their methodology was. Because you're right, I mean, consider...
It's expedient. I mean, it helps you get through, and there's going to be some things that will be clear that will make a big difference. But if this is a policy that's going to be revisited, has to be revisited, without having the knowledge, the history, how do we...
And you have to reword your policy 2.2.1, the word right, the red word R, measurable. Without benchmarking, without follow-up studies, you're not going to be able to measure anything.
I used to drive for the school, and the thing that made the biggest impact was when buses come up to the school to let kids on, just the fumes and so forth that the students were exposed to was completely eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And so the immediate concern was met. Long term, I have no idea if they've done some studies, but that was the main concern of having no idle, because of the immediate impact on these students.
And they've been driven by...
That was all subjective benefit. There was no empirical objective data provided either before or after.
More than likely, they pulled it from the state board.
If I may, yes, since I live out by Wood River, and believe me, I'm a fan of truck drivers and woeful end of days, right?
Just really quick to interrupt, for anybody new that speaks, if you could just state your
Ron
name.
Ron Braley.
We have a record.
Ron Braley, B-R-A-L-E-Y, Wood River. Lived out in Wood River now for about 9 years, and from an empirical data, no, I don't have it. I'm sure there's EPA studies, et cetera, but I can just tell you from personal experience, there's been a tremendous increase in the number of trucks that roll into truck town that are now using all of our side streets. And I'd go beyond the air quality. I also would be interested in knowing the ground and water impacts to that. And part of it is just the absolute amount of wear and tear on our roads, and just like any other entity, there's good and bad. And let's face it, there are some truck drivers that are not beyond putting their own personal waste, be it paper products or human waste, out on our roads. I don't know how you guys can police that on your own, but that is a big issue as far as I'm concerned too. And to go to your analogy, as a homeowner out there, I'm sitting behind that car. I can't move to another lane.
Right.
My house is sitting there. And now I've got, instead of two cars that I'm sucking fumes from, I've got three cars and four cars. In a recent, with the storm, and I know the truckers had no place to go, but the best egress and ingress to our subdivision is to come back down through to get to I-90. Couldn't get through there at all because of all the trucks. And the amount of yellow stains everywhere was pretty bad. So, I mean, part of it is, if you want to be a good neighbors treat one another as good neighbors. But I think it goes beyond just the air quality. It's going to be ground quality, water quality.
Overflow.
Noise problem. Exactly. I mean, there's just so many trucks that come through there. And, you know, I also just don't... The other thing that I wanted to bring up is, I've always been curious of what economic impact and or positive does the city of North Bend get out of Trump Town? and the trucks that come through and use our streets, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I don't care empirical data or not, any vehicle puts out emissions. It's just a fact of life. I mean, you can study it all you want, but, you know, at some point you come down to common sense.
With empirical data, you'll know that your history, your personal history is fabulous for the last 9 years. With empirical data, we have a better feel for exactly how that's changed over time.
Oh, yeah. No, and I agree with that. But, you know, if I'm sucking fumes for 10 extra years, yeah, and then who pays for it? Is that going to be us as taxpayers that pay for it, et cetera? But again, fumes are fumes, and if you're sucking them in for another 10 years while we do our studies, et cetera, to me, it's like, you know, let's get a little common sense in here, and that's one of the issues I have with government studies, et cetera, so I'll get out past the books.
Okay. Yeah. I'll be quick.
Go ahead.
Real quick, I understand what you're saying, and one thing that I do know, Parsons Foundation,
I'm Drew McCauley. Parts of the foundation
played. It was on East Evans. Yeah, you know, I went to breakfast the other day. You're right, it has doubled, probably tripled. Mm-hmm. It can't hold the amount of trucks. Back then it was sufficient. Supply and demand, there's more trucks on the road because there's more of us.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And so I agree with you, there is an overflow. I would like to see another truck stop or rest area put somewhere in this area.
Or land by next to it.
Yes.
Or down through.
I spoke to my husband about this. He says, we don't need the restaurant. We could go get our dinner, drive down the road. We need not porta potties in a parking lot.
No.
We need a nice a facility where we can go in. Not a porta potty, just you know, just a safe place that's lighting. Crime is up huge against truckers. And I don't know if you watched the link on Jason's Law. I sent it to more people. And I wondered if any of you consider contacting the feds. They're giving grants. I can't understand. It's been awful.
No, we're working on it.
Oh, you are?
Grant.
Oh, okay. They're giving grants. I can't see why, with our geographic location, when the path shuts down, why, you know, you wouldn't get.
There's actually people that are turning right. Grants down.
What is your name?
Joyce Hidma.
Hidma,
H-I-B-M-A. And they would also give money to help prove TA's facilities. I think it's worth looking into.
If I can add, Paul Clark, you're in a unique position here with past closures and what happens when those get closed, and I think it just kind of gets dumped into town here, and then the lack of parking in Seattle. So finding a way to accommodate truckers is really your best thing for the community is working with them and welcome them and come up with a way that you like that's great for the truckers and yes does add revenue to the city. Contact them if you're offering facilities, if you're coming into restaurants, hotels, anything you're spending money on that you're taxing, including the fuel that they're buying. It's generating revenue.
And we can't do
we don't that. Benefit from the
fuel. No benefit, yeah. Fuel doesn't. It's probably going down since we closed the whole gas station.
And don't be
I might as well go open a coffee shop right out there for the truckers or something. You know,
my name is Sherman Corson, and I live in Woodbury. I've lived there for 16 years. And I understand what everybody's position is, but if you spend 16 years in that intersection, when the path shuts down, that...
You can go that way.
You can go that way.
Yeah.
I interviewed the truck drivers that were parked on 140, heading down 140. I talked to one guy, he said, I've got a flat tire, I have no change. If I get out on the highway, it's a $500 fine. And...
So they come solve one problem.
So they stop in the middle of the high of yep. the road, and say I'm not going to go out there because it's a $500 fine. Well, the way to solve that is to have the same fine. I talked to a guy. He said I have no change, so I can't move. I can't go toward the pass. Well, if he has no change and he gets a $1,000 fine for that on the pass because of the snow, then how about we give him a $1,000 fine? It's about the free parking situation and the degradation to the infrastructure and the community that exists around it. I would tell you that the majority of the community is angry about what the truckers do. It's much like a scene from Pirates of the Caribbean. When these trucks come in the middle of the night, they're in, and they don't care where they drop anchor. So to get the community, who are the people who are paying the taxes, would have to pay for these empiric studies to come around, it takes some gentrification, number one, of the demographic of trucks who just come in and park any place they want to park, anytime they want to park. So it's going to require everybody coming together with a solution mentality rather than a penalty mentality. And I can appreciate what Tom's saying, but what Tom's saying is, you spend enough money to prove to me that I got a problem, then I'll go out and work on the problem. It's been proven. There's a study that comes out of Delaware that you all have a copy of, and if you don't, you get another one. That's exactly the count, the 175 capacity of TA. It's virtually the exact demographic and exact temperature of this community, and it has the data. So, I mean, if you want to have an empiric study, let's go get a warehouse. Let's take a truck in there, and Tom, you sit there for 8 hours, and when you come out, tell us if we got a problem. Because it continues and it continues and it continues. The traffic on I-90 increases, and we're subject to the will of these truck drivers to just come and park free. You can't park free on the streets of Seattle in your car. You can't park free at Safeco Field. You gotta pay for parking. If you're gonna come here, and we're not going to have an economic benefit from it, then pay for your parking or don't come here. There's an economic impact that's negative. You take a look at the access road that Petit showed in their study that goes into Cadman. In the very short operation of Cadman, very short period of time, that photograph, and I have the photograph right here, is a demonstration of what happens to a roadbed when it gets pounded on by 80 to 105,000 pound tandems. It tears it apart. And who pays for that? You people do, because you're all citizens of North Bend. I pay for it. Ron Braley pays for it. And the truckers, I don't think they could eat enough potatoes and buy enough potato chips to compensate for that impact that's going on in our streets. These are not all weather streets, and they're being damaged. The trucks park anywhere they want, one shoe on the asphalt and one shoe in the dirt, and it's expensive to work on that. I've built a lot of these things.
Yeah, okay. And just to kind of bring us back, what we're troubleshooting is the reality. We have trucks, we're going to have them. How do we mitigate for that? If our infrastructure is an issue, we need to put a policy in place that says develop strategies to address the impacts, whether that's through a gas tax that we talked about or some type of enterprise zone where, you know, we as a community have to determine how we access those funds that help mitigate, because we have people passing through that live on Mountside Road that use our roads and don't pay for them. And the trucks are just unfortunately the large vehicle that does do the most amount of damage, or is at least the most obvious. So to go back to because our mission tonight, and I want to bring this back up, we have a whole city right now we're planning for, and we do have to get our comprehensive plan through the process so we can be consistent with growth management. So I think one thing we might need to do tonight before we get too far down the road and it gets quite late is find out from the planning commission if you're okay with 99% of the policies, and if we're only down to the truck-related policies, then I think we just keep rolling with the discussion. And wherever we have a concern from a citizen, I think what the Planning Commission needs to do is decide is there a policy solution for that concern? And let's stick it in and start mowing through them. Because otherwise, we know we can talk about this all night. So I think let's just see if we can make some solutions happen in policy form.
Yeah, just to reiterate, that was, I think, four meetings or maybe five meetings ago that we put to the city council to create this group that was going to focus on Truck Town.
Yep.
So I'm really counting on that to happen in some clear form so that all these questions. Say again?
That was 2 meetings ago.
Was it only two?
I know. It's like
motion is 2 meetings ago?
And to be honest with you, the council has not met since. So.
That feels like a long time ago. Sorry.
So are you suggesting?
What? It has
not
been debated by the council at all.
No. The meeting that the Planning Commission held was after the first council in December. Neither committee met at the end of December. Planning Commission met again prior to... the council hasn't had a work study. They have a retreat tomorrow where they have these two topics on the agenda to hear everything that's been going on in this forum.
Yeah, this is the first time the transportation plan has been even looked at when Trucktown was included for the city. The first time since 1940. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of homework to be done.
No question. There's a lot of work to be done. It's not easy.
And I'm looking forward to it getting done. I don't think we can do it all. So I'll be a dead horse on the fact that I'm counting on the council to create the group.
So, Jen, are you suggesting that we basically start from the beginning of the document and essentially go through it like we did at the last meeting, or we did the section, or we did the section?
Yeah, because what I think is we'll probably end up rolling through most of it pretty quick, and we'll come back to the truck. I mean, everybody in this room wants to talk trucks. So I don't want to take the discussion away from that, but I also want to be able to give you guys some direction. Or if we want to stay on the truck-related issues, what I would suggest is when we do hear a concern, let's decide on a policy or no policy to address it so we can really start making progress on this document.
Maybe just call us back to everything but, for the moment, everything but Truck Town issues. So I know we've all had time to review this, or at least try to. Is there anything else in this transportation element, to call it that, that we need to spend time talking about?
Scott Lee did email me two comments. One relates to the idling policy, so we can come back to that one. The other one is on page 8. On policy P31.1.
Can you put that on the screen, please?
So Scott's comment was that with regard to parking maximums and minimums, he said, I agree we don't want to have too much parking, but we also don't want to be in a situation where we don't have enough. Maybe eliminating minimums is too drastic. So I guess what his suggestion would be, based on that comment, would be to strike eliminate so that it would just be establish and implement vehicle parking maximums and reduce parking minimums.
There's probably some discussion on that. I'm trying to read his mind, and I can't. If you reduce parking, this is under single occupant vehicle trip heading, which is confusing to tie those two together.
I don't see a problem with that language, because 9 times out of 10, the developer's going to develop to the maximum parking allowed. So if he feels more comfortable that we're not eliminating minimums, which what he's protecting from is the event that somebody would, because there's no parking minimums, develop a building without parking.
The private market's going to take care of its interest. So.
But I think there's no problem saying reduce. The interesting part we have is we do have a downtown that is designed around not having on-site parking. So we actually, to be able to continue to grow that environment in downtown, it is somewhat relevant to the discussion not to have minimums. But I know in our historic district it's exempted. But even as you go towards the roundabout, or for example, if Sydney Lot was developed, which is not in the historic district, it would in theory require parking. And would that be appropriate in the context it's in? Probably not. So that was why we were recommending eliminating, because there are scenarios that. But we could define those scenarios too in future regulations.
Nebulous terminology to me on that side wouldn't be a bad thing. Reduce versus eliminate would be a better choice of words.
Yeah.
Did you interpret Scott's comment to be the same?
Yeah. I think we could get rid of the word eliminate and we'd be fine.
Yep.
Okay.
And I'm assuming we don't need to make motion. This is administrative stuff here, right? The changes we're talking about in this document is just administrative.
We don't have to make a motion to change.
No, I think so. Consensus is fine.
Thank
so
you.
So just to clarify, so we skipped over the idling section. I had a question about one of the policies we're going to come back to.
What we're right now addressing is all policies that don't relate to trucks idling or any of their.
Can I just. Citywide idling, is that what you mean?
What's that? No, it's just that last time that we talked, we eliminated a paragraph that was around specifically calling out children and elderly people, and it's back in here, and so I just.
Which page?
Right.
Page 7.
So it's policy 2.2.1.
And that was Scott's comment as well.
Yeah, I just feel like it's not just for that.
It's not. The way it's worded, it says large effects in areas where collective idling would have a measurable impact, that was consolidation of, on air quality. And, so it's an and where children, so for example, the schools, the parks, so it's an and.
I guess, again, I just feel like we're calling out something very specific, and it doesn't.
I thought we had a period of air quality.
Yeah. But we X'd out the whole paragraph about even designating or specifying specific populations. Because who decides, and the comment that I made was, in a neighborhood like ours, yeah, we have lots of children in the neighborhood, but who decides,
X me in it.
This is what I'm hearing. I made a mistake.
Unfortunately, Rod's not here, but that's what he was saying. I believe was to keep it very general.
And then the ordinance is where we can have very specific things about schools or.
But this encompasses.
We just had a very long discussion about it, and I was surprised when I saw it.
Okay, so now I've taken that out, so it ends up process. That's what I understand, right? Okay.
But would it be effective for us to just go back and revisit the changes we made to make sure, to kind of follow that flow, because we reviewed it. So
I'm kind of doing that as we go through.
But I mean, just for the sake of the discussion, or we're just freelancing.
Well, the only change is
that was the big
section. The way we did this is we've just tallied up any change to the whole document, so I don't know if we can honestly say this one was the last change or
Yeah, it's documented there, right? Page 12, page 13.
I got 5 columns, something like that.
So
was also, I just caught this, but on page 6 for the goal G2, we had talked about adding water quality, which was added, and I thought that we had said that we would add public health.
Which one?
G2, page 6. Environmental quality.
Air and water quality.
And so we'd add what?
I had a note that we added
water
public
quality.
Health and water quality.
I know Ron was going to go down through the proposed chronology of events, right? I'm not trying to start that now. I'm thinking that's going to get us right back to this.
Once you guys are done with the policies, we're going to go to the policies.
Okay. I think I'm good with the policies. I don't have any of them. I'm good.
Is there a motion related to this, or are we still...
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the updated transportation comprehensive plan as amended.
Wait, hold on a second. We're not done with the plan yet. We'll be getting more of it.
This section
is a
section we've been presenting.
Policy and goals section.
Exactly.
Second.
Perfect.
Can't we get that?
We're trying.
So does that get you guys
what
you need to meet?
Yes,
okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Without objection, we're on to the floodplain?
Or are we on to Ron's transportation?
Capital improvement program.
There we go. I didn't know how long you wanted to wait for this, so either way works.
This is the first. We'll be presenting this up to the council tomorrow. So if you have the honor, I've got two more here. I can move on. You know, the honor of seeing this before the council does. So it incorporates the revisions.
All of my copies for everybody in the audience.
It incorporates the revisions that were suggested at the last meeting, such as reprioritization of one of the projects. And unfortunately, I don't remember which one it was, because I didn't bring my original stuff here, but I think one project moved down in priority.
Yeah, number 33, yeah. I believe, which is priority number 9.
The roundabout? Sidewalk
improvements.
Are you talking about,
yeah,
it depends on which page.
Yeah, see, I've renumbered the projects since then because I'm presenting this now as a sort of a order of projects to the council as opposed to the previous listing of them. But anyway, I shifted that one project down to have a similar priority. It might have been the Middle Fork Road 468 the intersection roundabout. The last thing that we did this time was we added cost estimates for the projects. The total cost for all of these projects amounts to somewhere around $38 million. Obviously, something we can't do in the next 6 years, but there will definitely be cut back for the six-year transportation improvement program once we take this to the council and figure out a financially viable, once we determine the where the money's going to be able to come from and how much we want to tackle the first 6 years. One of the elements is definitely going to be the transportation benefit district that is going to help us finance some of these projects. And again, it will be prioritized between street projects, which are the first 19, and then the sidewalk projects, which are the subsequent 16 projects. Project 27, which is sidewalk improvements on the south side of Cedar Falls Way between North Fenway and 436th, we divided into five separate segments because the in order to build the entire project at one time, we would need $1.5 million to do sidewalks along the entire corridor. So we figured it might be better to divide it off in small pieces instead of trying to do one entire project at one time. So we provided a list of segments for people to consider in putting these projects together. The pavement overlay program, which it's based upon $150,000 per year. It's $1.5 million over a 10-year period. We do have grant money for that as well, $250,000, which we received from TIB this year to help with funding an overlay on North Bend Way. We've got grant money for project number 23, in the order of about $149,000. And that is all the grant money we have right now.
For those from the outside grants, are they matching at all from the transportation
money? Match money is required for the grants, whether it's from the Transportation Benefit District or the city's capital fund. That's, I think the TBD and the city's capital funds will be combined together and used. Probably the city's capital fund will probably fight off some of the smaller projects, and the TBD will handle the larger projects. But hard to say, we'll see what happens.
Ron, I know this is tough to ask, I'm just curious how, it's kind of a magician's trick, I imagine, but when there's grant or other outside money available, is it typically available for X amount of time? In other words, the money that may be available now won't be available in 2 years? Is that normal?
Well, once it's awarded, as long as you're making satisfactory progress on the project, it stays there for you to use.
Okay.
For instance, we had grant money for the North Bend Way roundabout that was from the federal government, and we held that money for probably 5 years before we used it. But we showed that we were progressing in that direction, that we had needed additional funding from other sources before we could implement the entire project, so they were willing to wait until we found the additional money. Things like that. But once they give grant money to a community to do something, they don't like to pull it back.
Sure.
And of course, this community doesn't like to have a pullback from it, too. So,
does that technically mean we have cash in a trust account, or does it mean they promise to pay?
It means that they promise to pay.
Okay.
They don't give us the money.
Yeah.
It's a
all the projects are based on a reimbursement process. We have to pay, we have to complete the work, then they'll reimburse us for the expense. They don't just give us the money.
Got it. Thanks.
Where's the roundabout to Tanner?
Is that 17?
From Flesh Log to Tanner, that one grant that we got, is that all that off already?
Is that the one you were just talking about?
The existing grant?
Oh, yeah, that was the one that's already in, yeah.
So that paving that goes from the roundabout to Tanner?
That's right.
Is that part of this list?
No.
So that's already taken care of, and that was grant money?
It's part of the pavement overlay for the grant.
On the bottom?
Yeah.
So is that going to go ahead?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And the money from the city versus the grant money, what's it?
It varies on the grant. For the pavement overlay, they just gave us $250,000. We're required to provide a match on that one, I believe, of
I think it's 10%. Yeah, I thought it was 28,000.
Which is about 10%, yeah.
That's good. That's
awesome.
Way to go.
We're very happy about that, right?
Anytime we get grant money, we're happy to show.
We are.
Well, that's true. It's hard to get
grant money. That's something. That's
hey, Ron. I have a question.
Okay. That's great.
What about the intersection down here at 4th and 202 where we have that turn? Because I recall the deposit was dependent on that.
Right.
How is that being improved to allow that movement? From
how is it being improved?
Yeah, I thought we had a roundabout on
here. No, we don't have a roundabout. We don't have enough room for a roundabout at that location. I'll put the screen back down. That's okay. No, I have to draw it.
They didn't charge us.
Okay, this is the configuration right now. 202, Snoqualmie, I-90, and 4th Street. So the traffic goes around this corner like this, and there's a stop bar here. I guess this is, maybe it goes out a little bit more, I don't know. There's a lane here for a left turn, and this one goes like that. So what we're going to do here is we're going to wipe out this island. We're going to create an island like that. Traffic will come up here, do a stop, and traffic coming from this direction will come to two lanes, stop there. So traffic from Snoqualmie will have a free right.
going to I-90. Traffic from I-90 will come to a stop here. Be able to take a left or a right. Traffic from here will be able to take a left this way. Traffic from 202 can come into a separate lane right in here, take a stop, and then go through.
Do we have enough room to do a center turn lane? So the person that's on 4th Street turning left is going to have to merge into busy traffic, rush hour times?
There is enough pavement there for a center left turn lane if it's needed. We won't initially do it because we want to see how much volume goes through there, and then if their volume picks up and a lot more traffic goes that direction, then we can start separating them.
I'm just wondering, do we have enough of an understanding with the traffic data we have right now from Bendigo usage that the flow of traffic on Highway 202 to Bendigo is sufficient enough that it would make a left turn difficult and that they would need some kind of a staging lane?
So your concern is once they turn left onto...
I'm thinking with the downtown plaza, we're diverting traffic around downtown, we'll put more maybe access on the 4th to 202. And so maybe...
So you're saying 4th. So Kwame or 4th left back in the town.
I'm just wondering, yeah, is it going to be a problem for somebody on 4th Street to just get off there somehow to get into 202 or to Bendigo?
With a stop in each direction, everybody has to stop and yield for the first driver that's at the intersection.
But once they turn and come down, then they're merging again, and so they may start to cut across and don't have any place to cut to because...
So going towards Snoqualmie, they have a stop.
They will merge over here. It'll be a merging lane.
No, I see you have a stop that's going towards 202.
Right.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah, there's a stop.
Okay.
And of course, this is also subject to doing traffic counts, making sure that the volumes are light enough that this will still operate correctly. But it's the concept right now to do as much as we can with as little cost that we can, and hopefully allow traffic. More of this traffic to be able to go on to 4th and bypass the downtown area.
Is it correct that a roundabout is dramatically more expensive? And if so, is
well,
it because you've got
that
land?
Yeah.
Is that the acquisition of land that makes it that way? Or?
But it's difficult there because it's a very small area. And a roundabout takes a lot of space. We'd have to buy up some buildings.
Yeah.
Things like that. We could maybe buy out the mobile home park.
Yeah.
Get rid of some complaints about the sewer department.
And maybe our little structure that's been sitting there for how long.
Ron, one other question. Priority project number one, which is the South Fork extension, what is the time to complete something like that? And I'm just wondering, this is a quick hit, so how are they coordinated? At all, or is that going to be a recommendation to coordinate?
They treat separate areas, so they don't have to be done at the same time, but there is a relationship in trying to get both of these projects done before the downtown plaza is done, so we divert the traffic away from the downtown, because otherwise the downtown plaza is going to get totally inundated with traffic still going through there, and the improvements will have no meaning at all in the plaza area.
And when you look at the estimate, $85,000, if we're going after the 2.2, I think you're right. Let's tack on that 85 and get them done together. I mean, realistically, if we could, that would be perfect.
Now, the 2.25 is going to, I'm proposing to do that with two sources of funds. One is our storm drainage fund, because there's stuff related to developing a levee to that area, and the other portion with either transportation benefit district funds or whatever funds else we can get. And I'm also thinking that we need to put in a request to the Snoqualmie tribe to contribute to this.
sense to combine those?
Sorry?
Does it make sense to combine those?
The projects?
The one and three?
Yeah, the two.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, we're saying.
Because that 85,000, you know, that might be, that's a 202 issue. So you might be able to suck something off at WashDOT that wouldn't come out the other way.
WashDOT's not going to pay for anything.
So interesting you bring that up, because I have a question that's sort of on the horizon. I was going through the flood document, and on 202 Bendigo, right at the bridge, there's a little house on the left-hand side if you're going north. That's, I think...
The bridge by the treatment plant?
Yes.
Okay.
We're together?
Yep.
I believe, and I haven't researched this lately, but I believe that house is now owned by one of the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FDIC, somebody. It's a bank-owned property.
Okay.
And it occurs to me that if someone controlled that parcel, the improvement to the bridge, which is in the pipeline, would be a heck of a lot easier. And that property floods frequently.
It's a repetitive loss property in our community rating system and National Flood Insurance Program. So yes, it's got its problems. But again, it's out of our control. It's the bank that owns it. The bridge, getting that improved, good luck. It's going to be a DOT project, not a city project.
So the city has the property opposite on the other side of that bridge. If the city owned both sides of the bridge, would that help our case?
No.
Would it hurt us?
It would hurt us, but it won't help us at all. I mean, unless we want to put our own separate bridge across the river for pedestrians and bicyclists.
And well, I was coming back to the flood piece, because there's, if I read this properly, there are funds out there that are tied to our mitigation efforts as it relates to flooded property. I'd have to dwell into it more, but I just see an opportunity of something that's, you know, distressed property owned by an entity like a bank. Now is the time, versus a private party owns it, and now we've got to deal with it then. So maybe I just leave it at that and come back to it later.
Yeah, I understand what you want to do.
Sorry for redirecting.
I don't have an answer.
Fair enough.
I just have a quick question about item number 9, opening the vehicular connectivity between Old and Sedgwick. That's the one with the barrier, right? What if is pedestrian? I'm assuming in the cost of $25,000, that pedestrian sidewalk right away is included in that cost.
Right.
If this particular item gets shot down by the city, does that mean that pedestrian right away gets shot down as well?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm wondering if there's a way to parcel it out like you've done with these others, so that there is the option to not lose that pedestrian right away. Especially as it was put in the last meeting.
But it already has pedestrian traffic on it.
There's no sidewalk or curb structure.
Wait, are we talking about two different
Maybe I'm talking about the different
This sure. says these are two, at those are two different
street.
Yeah.
Street.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're talking about that little weird connector.
I remember that
trail
street.
One. Yeah, the one that Mike brought up. That
yeah, on Maple.
Yeah. Street? No, I'm talking about
the
one with the
street. Street. The barrier. Street.
The road.
Oh, okay.
The wooden barrier. There.
Yeah, for right. Okay.
But there's no sidewalk or curb going across, and that was one of the reasons why I brought that one particularly is for that area, because there is a lot of foot traffic through Old Side View and New Side View, kids, moms, cars, little scooters, that type of stuff, that having some sort of crosswalk or designated crosswalk there.
Cross Orchard, you're talking about now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's a different issue that's been brought up before, and I've mix that location for a crosswalk because it's on a curve. Mm. You want to put the crosswalks in straight sections of roadways. Mm-hmm. If you go through that location during the festival at Mount Si, mm-hmm. you got cars parked everywhere in there. People could walk across that corner in a crosswalk thinking they're safe, and people come along there and not see it because of all the parked cars.
I think you'd have that down that whole strip, even down where the
but not in a intersection, and not in a straight section. So the best crosswalk location is really on the next intersection to
Bendigo. That's the closest.
No, not Bendigo.
But that's the closest.
Bendigo.
I'm sorry, North Bendway. Sorry, that's the closest.
When you come around,
when you come around
across from the park, that old side view.
Yeah.
Roadway, whatever it is, river.
That's Meadows. Riverbend.
I'm not sure which street it is, but it's the...
So my question then would be, going from Nusai on that corner, going down to the street that you're talking about, it's called Riverbend. There's no sidewalk.
There isn't, no. Right.
So that
sidewalk needs to be developed in that area.
Right. So if that sidewalk did exist, that comes from the barriered area and then wraps around that way, that would make
right.
perfect sense.
Yeah.
So what about adding that?
We could.
That?
We
could.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other question about that other project, which was opening it up to 5th Street?
Yes.
Fifth Street.
Yeah, no, that one's there. Yeah. Yeah, so maybe we could include that sidewalk, just because that was the spirit behind those. Thinking is getting better, clearer traffic pedestrian flow. If there's no crosswalk that can happen on that curve, I just say
yeah.
safety. Doing something to bring it around, because otherwise people have to go through legally, technically, mm-hmm. safely on North Bend Way. You know, if you're following all the sidewalks out of the new side view or whatever, it just doesn't make sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
we can do that. That's fine.
So around clarity like that, I mean, is that? As you start to tackle these individual projects, to get clarity and definition around how you're going to tackle that. So this is a really good example of where you put a sidewalk, or where a sidewalk might be asphalt, or where a sidewalk might be for a trail light. How will you capture and gather that clarity for things like that? I'm specifically thinking about the number 24, which we talked a little bit about last time we met, was how to deal with whether it is sidewalk or trail. So how will you capture or gather that clarity in order to start the project? I know you have a number here, so...
Based on hard sidewalk and curbs.
But we talked about specifically...
There are some areas where we use trails.
Right.
That's fine, but for right now, I'm processing it out.
So you're costing it at the high end.
Right.
So then at what point or when do you get the clarity of this is how we're actually going to approach it? This section will be...
If we're going to try to get grant money for it, then we'll clarify at that time. If we're paying it directly out of city funds, then we'll clarify it at the time that we... request the money from the council for budgeting purposes. Exactly what we're going to do.
So then for that project specifically, we do ask for citizen input for just so that we have the opportunity to come to the table to propose ideas or...
Yes, in that case, if it's a sidewalk, hard sidewalk, it's going to be built in the right of way, curb gutter, partnership with sidewalk. Most likely, if it's a trail, it's going to be a trail that incorporates river, for example. And at that point, we would probably have to go to a river. So if it is a sidewalk, it's usually in the public right-of-way. And if it's not in the public right-of-way, we have to go acquire it.
Also, as a development project, it's likely a trigger SEPA, which has its own kind of permit period.
Okay.
So I'd like to just ask priority number 11, which is item 17, the roundabout at North Bend Way and 436 Avenue Southeast. And I was just hearing and what you think is the total and the projection of time that this might take. And I'm wondering if it might make sense to move this up to priority number 9 or something along those lines, just because I think as the downtown corridor gets developed, the east side development gets developed, that's going to see more use, and we might want to prioritize that a little bit higher to handle the volume and especially make the left turn easier from that area.
Well, some of the projects that are in front of it have been on the TIP for a while along with that project. The ones in black are on the existing six-year TIP. There has been a very sharp degradation in the roadway at Pickett Avenue and at Bolt. And those, I think, are projects that the council are wanting to do for the benefit of the citizens. The other projects are either safety related or, say, the you talked about which
it's priority number 11.
Number 11.
Like we're going to higher
bend. Northbound Bendigo at Park Street, right?
No, roundabout at North Bend Way, 436 Avenue South.
Item 18, is that what you're talking
about? Item 7, it's number 17, but it's priority number 11.
Oh, I see, okay.
Sorry. So, yeah, I'm not saying move it, to the top 5 or 8, but I'm
Number 9. I was looking at the new
numbers.
Okay, all right.
So the roundabout at North Bendway, 436 Avenue Southeast, and so I was saying as the downtown corridor gets developed, and we're also developing lots out on the eastern part of the town, I see that maybe our long-term, maybe 5 and 6 years, we might actually need that, and maybe move that up in our priorities so we can get that higher on the list. I don't know if that addresses that.
So it's a, you're saying it's 11 now, it ought to be in the 9-10 range?
That's what I think.
Well, there's 2 9s already.
Move those to double 10s.
So just scoot all those down. Make the 9s 10s, the 10s 11s.
How often is this evaluated, Ron? Hourly or monthly?
Grants available, what can we fit in?
Once it's established, it's not evaluated again for, every year we have to go and redo the six-year TIP based upon what's the next projects down the list and stuff like that. We start considering out of any of the other projects down the list based upon what's happening either in the community or, we got an opportunity for a grant or something like that. Sometimes opportunity for grants bumps it up to a higher priority than what it used to be,
sure,
things like that. I think this project number 17 on the current list, it's far enough down the road that you might be looking at it again in maybe another 6 years. It's not going to get to that or that quickly, even if it's bumped up to number 9.
Okay.
So it might go from 11 to 4.
I think it's probably going to be on the list again when we go back and review this transportation study one more time. So I guess I wouldn't be too concerned about the projects.
If it moves to a level, it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think the problem at that intersection, if it does develop, is going to take a while to develop too. So I think you'll have another opportunity to say, yeah, it's time to look at this now as a higher priority thing. But right now, there's not that much of a problem with that intersection.
Okay. This is great. And I like just looking at it, perspective on it.
It's
good to have a sense of.
Those aren't hard, fast costs, right?
park estimates?
No. One thing.
I don't have any other comments.
It's just a really good photocopy of the...
No, it's the same thing, it's just the way they were numbered, so...
It's a really good photocopy of the state calls.
I know, I keep that.
Let's make it shorter.
Say again?
Mr. Chair, we have any transportation?
Yeah, I was going to ask if there's any other discussion on this topic before we move on to the agenda number 5. Any comment from staff before we move to the next agenda item?
Thank you, Mr.
Carroll. Thank you, Mr. Carroll, for your diligence and support.
We were just talking about another project, but it was a project that we have no control on.
Aren't there a lot of those?
Yeah, there are a lot of those.
The next item of our agenda has to do with floodplain management. There was a ring binder I recall getting on our last meeting,
and we apologize for the amount of paper.
Well, I started going through this just as a personal comment. I felt, man, this is like, this should be every Tuesday night from 3 to 7 for the next 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And there should be an instructor I'm talking about.
We were going to try to give you the click notes to find out where your areas of concern are. So if we need to elaborate, we can go there, because you're right, it's something that...
Yeah. Well, just the majority of the updates in this are deletions.
I never got a copy.
Do
you have any extra copies?
I do.
Thank you.
If there's not an alternative plan, I was going to suggest we do kind of what we do, as we always do, is kind of go page, paragraph, chapter, by that, whatever. Section by section. See where my head is about this.
What might help too is that you realize what it entails, and you know, because Ron administers the blood management, so I don't know if it helps to give you a small summary of why we're doing this.
Is that what happened, Ron? I'm sorry.
And then that way you can focus on, because there's parts of that that are more important than others. Just yeah.
The waters run fast and deep there. Okay, summary of the, you want sort of a summary of the flood plan and why we have to do it and stuff like that?
Sure.
Okay. The city is one of many cities that are under the National Flood Insurance Program, and what we do is we provide reduced insurance rates, we provide the opportunity for property owners to have reduced insurance rates as long as the city administers building codes that helps to minimize the damage to property in the floodplain. And the program is reviewed on an annual basis by an organization that subcontracts with FEMA, and every 5 years we go through an audit process. To be a member of the National Flood Insurance Program, we have to have, similar to transportation and water and sewer comp plans, we have to have our own flood program, flood plan. What are we going to do in the community to ensure that we are protecting our citizens, protecting property, protecting lives? And fall plans and policies and goals that will help to improve the environment here, as well as protect fish and the environment and things like that. So it just like the transportation, it brings everything together and gives us direction of where to go. It's reviewed by FEMA as part of our program with them, has to be approved by them before the city council can approve it. And so the first one was put together back in 2004, and every 5 years we have to update this, unfortunately. It's one of those unfunded mandates again. The first one was very lengthy in its nature because it was the first one. There was a large citizen advisory committee that was helped to develop the plan. And since then, there really hasn't been any change in the floodplain, really. It's just maybe there'll be some certain elevation changes or, not even that, because this flood plan was also based upon the 2005 FEMA study that was done for the North Bend area. So since the adoption of that floodplain map, we really haven't had any change in our floodplain except for the annexation of the Trucktown area and Stilson area and Maloney Grove area. We didn't really add too much to our floodplain inventory, but still we have to address that. So most of the changes that we have done in this document are to eliminate a lot of the historical processes that the Citizen Advisory Committee went through and get it back to just a basic document of here's our program, here's where we want to go with it, here are some of the policies. We've adopted some of the older policies that we had, and they no longer are in there or no longer apply because we've already adopted the code to it. And that's pretty much about it. We don't think that there really needs to be any additional changes to our program. However, Planning Commission or the City Council may say, well, we're offering 20% discount right now to the property owners. We want to do a higher discount, which we could. We go to 25%. But that means we have to do a lot more programmatic things, public education, internal documentation, record keeping, programs to buy out houses that are repetitive loss properties that are really a burden on the insurance program, things like that that really would require more of a half-time person to administer, maybe even a full-time person to administer, something that we really can't support by our permitting fees or things like that. So there's sort of a balance as to how much of a program we want to implement, how much it's going to cost, what are the benefits to the property owners. King County is the highest rated county, I believe, in the nation in terms of their flood program.
High is a good thing.
Pardon?
High being good?
High being good.
Or the insurance pays.
Yeah.
Or regulation itself.
But they spend a lot of money on that program.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they come down our backs too. We have some of their people always looking over us. Oh, what about the channel migration issue and stuff like that? Anyway.
Sorry, Ron. I come back to that.
Channel migration issue?
No. The rating that the county has earned. Better than others in the nation.
Right.
I'm struck by that a bit. Why would they go that far? And what's it? How does it affect us? I guess since we're.
It doesn't affect us, because we are an independent jurisdiction. So they rate the independent jurisdiction that controls the flood program and the building permits within that jurisdiction. So
I think that they do, and I think you'll know, they actually restrict development in the floodplain, right?
Right.
So like our entire city's in the floodplain. We would never go that direction.
Sure.
But that, because of that, the people that are existing living now living in the flood would get a lot better rates on their insurance, but they're ensuring no more people are going to be living in the floodplain. Since we have a city in the floodplain and we want it to fill in, we won't go to that level, so we will never have those rates that the county can offer. Yeah.
They have flood warning programs that are countywide that we can't necessarily afford to institute, but we piggyback onto theirs, fortunately. They maintain levees. We don't. They have a lot of other flood-related activities that just go beyond our capabilities. FEMA likes that, you know, so they will reward them with more points and therefore a higher rating.
And I get your point earlier about, you know, we could probably have a higher rating, but the cost to get there, cost benefit.
Right.
Question.
So what's in front of you here is basically a document to pare down the original one to a little more concise and shorter version, address some of the things that have happened since the first one, especially in our permitting programs, and just move on from there. Minimal amount of work necessary to satisfy FEMA on upgrading our plan. There are some issues that need to be addressed in here, such as the issues with the recent direction FEMA has to take based upon the lawsuits from National Marine Fisheries Service and another lawsuit which recently was filed with the National Wildlife Federation, but that one's being contested. So those type of issues need to be at least identified in the document. We don't have to resolve them right now because those are still under consideration, but we have to at least acknowledge them.
Didn't we visit some sections of this recently with regards to the property that's down here at, I can't remember, it's right as you kind of start out of town. The gentleman who has the property, he originally purchased it thinking you were going to have some recreational stuff going on.
Yes.
So didn't we visit some of that
we
stuff?
Did.
And so is that...
We have addressed his comments in Chapter 10, our alternatives that the city can pursue to achieve these points.
I remember the rating system we talked about.
Yeah, some of those comments that he provided were those alternatives were too drastic.
Right.
So we took a look at those and we agreed largely that yes, the original draft here from 2005 was a little too drastic. So we proposed getting rid of some of those more stringent alternatives, like prohibiting development in the floodplain. That was actually listed as an option there.
So those are already incorporated in here. They called out that so we don't have to revisit them again.
Right. Okay. So with each of those, we also provided a little comment in the comment bar of why we were recommending particular deletions or additions.
Okay.
Another two separate documents, but was the shoreline master plan ever play into this or any sort of development of this or editing of this?
Or is there any guidance on how they should work together?
Yeah.
They do work together.
The Shoreline Master Program's got its fingers in everything.
Yeah.
The only thing with this plan is that we acknowledge in the plan that we do have a Shoreline Master Program, which helps to address the environmental impacts of implementing the floodplain program. So at least there's acknowledgement between the two.
It would
be nice if we don't have to repeat both of them.
The two documents go hand in hand in the realm of they complement each other. They're for different purposes.
Right. Because I thought in the Shoreline Master Program we actually referred to our floodplain.
Yeah.
So,
even more, you refer to the flood hazard regulations which basically are a big part of our point system. So the Trailer Master Program, those three all kind of interplay.
So this is more akin to the comprehensive plan for flooding. This is what's directing the development of our flood regulations, but this isn't the regulations itself.
So this point system is community rating system we're talking about.
Correct.
And the total is 10? That's the best score?
No, that's the worst score.
Pardon me, see, we went high.
One is the best.
Okay.
We are at a 6.
Right.
The county, I believe, is at a 2, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, just kind of out of the box, I know we're in a technical hearing conversation here, but the first thing I think about is levees. If I want to keep water from inundating my space, I put a block around it so that the water can't get in. That's super basic. And I've heard for the last 4, 5, 6 plus years, every time there's a flood event, somebody's talking about the levees not working. What does that really mean? Why aren't we able to just go in and improve the levees?
The levees are the ownership of King County, not the city.
Okay.
The levees were at one time supposedly certified to hold back the 100-year flood. They have since been decertified because they're becoming more porous and the flood elevations of those storms are actually higher than what was originally designed. Through better modeling, a little more history on the amount of flow that comes down the river and the frequencies of them, not to say that we also are providing more impervious surface area and therefore more runoff or whatever, that being set aside there, we're learning more history, you know, or more probabilities on what those flows are, and those 100-year flows tend to be higher than what the levees are right now. There are possibilities of improving the levees, but they take lots of money. King County has gone through, and when we've also gone through some cost-benefit studies in the past, is it more costly to improve the levees, or is it more costly to fix up the houses, or where's the cost-benefit analysis?
Buy people out.
You know, there are a lot of options to address flooding, and it's been found more that it's cost-benefit ratio is better for elevating the existing buildings and let people live where they are. Just raise it up, allow the flood waters to go underneath the building, and go back.
Unfortunately, that requires being flooded out to do, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an after-the-fact type of thing, where, you know, once your house is ruined, then you get the grants and loans.
No, it's not after-the-fact. I mean, if you're in the floodplain, and if your finished floor elevation is lower than the expected or flood level, you're still eligible for it.
Through FEMA? Or through?
No, through a grant program through King County.
Okay.
That they got from FEMA and from the Corps of Engineers. I can't remember exactly the sources of all the money, but there was a program, or there is a program right now, where they have a limited number of dollars that people can sign up to have their house elevated if they want to. It's available to anybody that's in a floodplain, but there's not that much interest because a lot of people in the floodplains have not been flooded yet. So the ones that are more frequently flooded, yeah, they're really interested and they want to have it done. So if you go over to whatever that place is over there,
Shamrock Park.
Shamrock Park, yeah. I was going to say short forest, but it's not. I knew it started with this inch. It's here. Shamrock Park, they have flooded twice in the last 5 years, and a lot of them were interested in it. So they got on board, and they got grant money for it.
But not everybody did.
No, not everybody did.
Because I think there was also damage from Columbia. It was the same thing. There's a limited number, and I think lots of people apply.
Well, there's two pots. There's FEMA dollars, and then this county pot. And that was mostly the county.
Yeah, so I'm aware that the county had
The county had made a program available to upper Snoqualmie Valley, including North Bend, Snoqualmie, and unincorporated King County. So it was all lumped together.
And actually, when you look at our repetitive loss properties, I think we have four.
Four.
Yeah. So we really don't, we don't flood like Snoqualmie. So a lot of the flooding that occurs around here is actually
interior, right?
Yeah, or in the county, you know, because the north part, which is the middle park, sorry, the middle park, the levees aren't consistent where they are in the south park. So it's, you know, it's kind of different scenarios too. So over there, the county's evaluating. It's easier to buy people out than build levees. So that's their approach in that region, in King County.
That was a the document sticker now.
You know, from there, I thought we made progress, and then I realized that there's nothing to do.
No, it's, I guess I just keep coming back, and I see this. I can see it very clearly as a homeowner, property owner, saying, "Okay, I'm going to cover my own tail when it comes to flood issues. I'm going to have insurance, and I'm going to have insurance and make sure I've got that, and then whatever else I can reasonably do." But as a town, and you have much better insight here than I can even think about, but if there's a way to buffer the potential of an event, then the value is hard to equate, but it's large. It's kind of like, I'll use another town, no offense to them, but Duval. I've talked to a number of developers and people who would develop work sites, office parks, that kind of concept. And when they start talking about going up the valley, there's sections of 203 that might just get cut off for a week. No grocery, no trucks, nothing. So they don't even, that's off the table. They don't talk about it. But, so I use that same concept. If we can mitigate or eliminate the potential that we're going to be flooded, some potential of the ratios, it seems like the value return is exponential, not on a property-by-property basis. And I just wonder why we can't spell that out somehow. I mean, that's not something for this year or next. That's the next 100 years.
Actually, are you talking about something like, if, like, for example, the connector road between Nintendo and the casino, if it's built like Ron was talking about with flood reduction dollars, that could be a setback levy, which we would then, in theory, move the levy to allow more space for water during a flooding event. That would obviously reduce flooding upstream and potentially help Snoqualmie. So that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, I've added that as an alternative in here.
Yeah. I just kind of, that's reaching out. It's beyond the scope of where do we spend our money right now.
Right.
But if policy said in town going forward that at every opportunity we would look for ways to improve our levee system and do whatever we could politically to make sure the relevant dams are taken care of, it seems like that's something that just, it, the value just would go on and on and on for us.
I think I hear him developing a policy, isn't it?
I just want to put it out there because I get too caught up in the moment right here,
sure,
these details. But the real issue is, let's figure out a way to get the flood to stop, or at least slow it down, as we're developing and creating more impervious surface, and et cetera, et cetera.
Of course, the National Wildlife Federation's solution is no development in the floodplain.
Sure.
Which then becomes a take.
Yeah.
Against all the other property, all properties.
Absolutely.
Because they don't want to take responsibility for a take.
Right.
It becomes then the city's problem, you know, and the city's going to have to be paying all those property owners for not being able to develop.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sure their lawsuit's going to be, you know, cut down because of that.
Yeah. If I were king, there'd be no takings, there would be buyings. Or you can't have it. Yeah, fair enough. All right, are we noticing the time? I'm not sure where you would like us to be on this. Do we...
If you guys... we've had the public hearing,
right? We did have the public hearing. We could kick part of this to our next meeting, if need be, to give you more of a chance to read it. We could also just go through and give a summary of the changes that were made in each of the particular chapters. The majority of the work is in Chapter 10, and that's where we wanted to have more of your input, which is the mitigation and action plan that calls out the specific recommendations for projects and policy actions. The rest of it is more informational updates that were provided, were to delete extraneous information, update old figures.
It sounds like, based on the hour and based on what Mike just said, because I didn't know the level of, I think I missed the meeting you guys actually talked about this. I didn't know the level of comfort you guys were, whether it was ready to be, make a motion to move on and adopt or not. So if that's not where we are, what I would actually recommend then is we bring it back and devise a plan to walk through the changes.
Yeah, my question could have been said a different way. Do we go to midnight because you need us to, or do we pass this on to the next meeting?
I say we pass it on.
Okay.
What do you guys say?
She's not going to be here for the next meeting.
But that wasn't why.
I'm sure you didn't process all of that.
Nice.
With all of that comment, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
Second.
No objections? We are adjourned.
Okay, Mike. One of my questions might be on page 1-2, if we just update the total losses because we've had six more flood incidents. So I don't know if you have...
We are going to probably eliminate that table because we can't get updated information from the county on it. So we may just try to make qualitative statements about it and not worry about the quantitative losses for each year.
Are you it's not necessary.
That's where you are?
The page before that, where it said 13 losses instead of 7.
Okay. So yeah, I was just going to point out the same thing.